In today's action-packed episode of the Foden Bead Show, we speak with Cahoon M, and then Vimes, and then go over the results of the third round of the Swiss. Welcome to the Foden Bead Show, a weekly podcast about the Star Wars Armada Vassal World Cup. Hello and welcome. I'm Rathos42, and with me today is my co-host, Armchair Jedi.
Hello there.
Joining us today is Cahoon M. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm doing good. I had a long weekend in Vancouver, Canada, so feeling energized. How about you, Armchair?
Yeah, I was. It was a bit of a long week last week. My little guy got COVID, and so that means we all did, and so we're all kind of over it now, except for this latent stuffiness you can hear. But other than that, yeah, doing really good.
We don't usually talk about ourselves too much, but that's actually really important. We had a local event, a tournament at one of the local game stores, Imperial Hobbies in Vancouver, over the weekend. It was the first time I played real-life Armada in months, and Armchair organized it, but unfortunately wasn't able to go because his family was sick, and so he was sick. So it was self-isolate and keep them out. So that was too bad. But that was also a good part of my weekend. I got to play Armada this weekend with little plastic spaceships.
I got to look at pictures of the plastic spaceships, which was almost as good, kind of.
Yeah, pictures is definitely better than nothing.
Yeah, I'll go into a question I didn't pre-send to you, Cahoon. Have you played Armada in real life recently?
I have not, unfortunately. Since I just moved out here to Knoxville, I haven't. There's not much of a local scene here, so no IRL plastic spaceships for me.
Maybe you start one.
I'm working on it, actually.
Nice. That's awesome. How long have you played Armada?
I've been playing pretty heavily since about December 2019, but I've had portions of the game since it came out in like 2015, I think.
Remind me of timelines. December 2019, is that before people started locking down COVID or after?
That was the very, very beginning because we went to the Redmond Prime in January of 2020. And that was kind of the end of everything.
Yeah.
So what brought you to Vassal? You just got into this game. COVID locks everything down. You could have just as easily dropped it and moved on. What brought you to the online community in Vassal?
Honestly, the local scene where I first started was in Washington, D.C. And the guys up there are great. And I did get to play with them at tournaments and a couple like local game nights. And they were good at holding my attention and my buddy's attention. But what really got me to Vassal was the first World Cup that I witnessed. I guess it was the 2020 World Cup. I found it really interesting, like analyzing the competitive lists and how people were running their stuff and what they were running, especially as a newer player, sort of looking up to the people that were participating in the Vassal World Cup was like, I think it actually probably helped me enjoy Armada as much as I do.
Do you find that you've got a sort of analytical bent to start with?
Yeah, I tend to enjoy numbers and running like analysis and reading into things that I probably shouldn't read into.
I know at least one other podcast host that likes that. It's not my strong suit.
Yeah, no, I definitely like playing with the numbers and making my little charts and graphs and getting half of the things wrong and having people remind me that I've done it wrong and going back and fixing them. It's all part of the fun.
That reminded me, we got our first podcast oopsie last week.
Well, no, see, I think we should play that as on purpose. And it's nice to know that there are so many well-known, well-respected people in the community who listen to our podcast.
So, Cahoon, are you playing in the Second Chance event?
I am playing in the Second Chance event.
So, tell us about the fleet that you brought to the VWC itself. What went into it? How did you come to create it? What was your thoughts? What do you love about it? What did you end up hating about it? That's too many questions.
Yeah, so my VWC list this year was General Ryken with three MC-30 torpedoes, a Chammerhead, a Hondo flotilla, and then Lando and Ketsu as my squads. I really like the MC-30. It's probably my favorite ship in the game. So I knew going into it that I wanted to incorporate at least one. But the lists that I was torn between were this one. I had triple MC-30s and I think a CR-90 under Akbar. And then I had a Dodonna LMSU fleet, pretty run-of-the-mill, like MC-75, and then I think two MC-30s and a couple Hammerheads. And I had run the Dodonna and the Akbar ones a couple of times, so I was like, why not change it up a little bit and run Ryken, who's also not an admiral that I have used very frequently. I think maybe one or two times before.
I think Riken's interesting because he got nerfed pretty hard around the time that you probably started playing. So I could see him seeming a little bit less nice than other admirals.
Yeah, I wasn't around for when he was really the boogeyman. But yeah, that didn't really stop me. But that probably is the reason why I didn't use him much when I first started out.
How did your fleet end up doing in that the original event?
It did okay. Not as great as I had hoped. I did have some pretty noteworthy opponents to go up against, but I think it was lacking in like the anti-squad department. So when I went up against a lot of squads, I got just thrashed by them, which I don't know exactly what I could have changed about the list itself or the way I was flying to fix that. I maybe just unlucky rolls or poor flying against them was probably the result.
Well, it's interesting. I'm looking at your pod again now, and you've got Protomaker with Consular Spam.
Yeah, under Kenobi, yeah.
Under Kenobi. Forminder with a Ventu Plo Koon and 10 Beetles.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be hard no matter what you do.
Yeah, and then the Armored Ginger with Recusant Light Destroyer, Patriot Fist, and 3 Munificence. And yeah, so I'm playing a fleet very similar to Forminder's in the Second Chance event, and I've played two squadless fleets now, and it is destroying. Those beetles are gross when somebody doesn't bring a squad defense, so I could see how that might wreck you.
Yeah, and it really hurt. I think we actually played in the Second Chance event, if I recall correctly.
We did.
Yeah, and I didn't have any squads, and I got thrashed, so...
Yeah. Yeah,
that yeah, 10 Y-Wings is something that I've liked since I first started, but I liked running it under the Rebels until the Republic stuff came out.
Yeah, for me, I'm liking the fact that it's kind of a good combined arms without going too deep into the squads. I prefer the ship game, and so the fact that I can get, you know, 60-some-odd points of squads and still have a squad presence feels really good.
Yeah.
So you joined the Second Chance event. Did you bring the same fleet or a different one?
I brought a very different one.
What are you playing in that event?
I am playing 3 Rebel Larges, one of each of the MCs. So a Liberty, a Home One, and then a Profundity. Not with those titles, though. Because I haven't run a large ship in, I want to say, like a year or so before this VWC. I think maybe the last time I did it was in Green Knight's team tournament, maybe March or April of 21. So since then, I haven't run any large ships. And I was like, you know what? Why not run 3 of them?
Yeah. If you've already, as with me, failed your way out of the main event for the year, might as well see what else you can do.
Yeah, why not?
So I know how yours and mine first game went. Unfortunately, my Protomaker clone fleet destroyed your 3 larges. How did your second game go? Are the 3 larges doing any better for you out of that second game?
They did a little bit better. Luckily, my opponent, the Armored Ginger, was also squadless, so no squads to worry about. However, she did bring an Onager and 3 gladiators, one of which was demo. Yeah, so that was... I'm so used to flying my little shrimp that I can, you know, fly around the ignition arcs of the Onager and get into its sides to blow it up, but that is a lot harder to do when your ships are only speed 2 or 3.
Right, and those gladiators, each with intel officer except for a demo, each with APTs, I imagine they just zipped up, they locked down your good tokens and then just laid in some crits, and then of course you got the Onager just blasting you from downtown.
Yep, the APTs put in a lot of work. Which I don't think I've seen APTs or ACMs much recently in a lot of fleets, but they did way more than I think I've ever gotten out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good, well, a good for them, not so good for you matchup, because on, you know, on the larges, those extra damage it plinks in there can, you know, put in some critical crits at the worst possible times. You know, you get a projector misaligned or something like that, and then you're kind of wide open for another attack.
Yeah, I think I ended up eating a total of like 6 or 7 APT shots on all of my ships. And I want to say 2 of those were structurals and the rest, I think, were just nothing huge. But it definitely hurt. And the intel officers, like you said, that also made it really hard, especially for the larges that, you know, they have trouble sparing the tokens they have already. So losing what I had was a pain.
So can you tell us about any of the VWC or second chance games that you've played already that you thought were interesting?
Yeah, so I actually had a ton of fun in all three of my pod games for the VWC. The one that sticks out to me as, I don't know, the most interesting probably would be my one against Formender. The Formender is someone who, he's pretty much the person who taught me most of what I know about Armada. He's one of the local guys back in DC who I used to play with like every Monday night. So playing him is always a ton of fun. I don't think I've ever beat him to this date, and I'm pretty sure we've played like 20 or 25 times. So
so going into that pod, you're already like, well, I'm aiming for second here.
Yep. I remember texting my buddy who also played against Formander a couple times saying, like, I can't believe he's my pod. Like, what? How unlucky is that? Because, I mean, I went in kind of confident that I had it certainly improved since the last time I played him, but he's still a scary opponent nonetheless.
That's right. Last time I was but the learner. Now I am the master.
I wish that's how it went.
Not quite.
Yeah. And how typical is that, too? You show up at, like, a World Cup event, and your first opponent in your first round is, like, your local guy.
But, yeah, that game against Formander, it felt good, I think, for the first two rounds. I felt like I had him, like, right where I wanted him. And then after we played the game, we talked about, you know, what we both could have done better and all that. And what I have aptly named the Hondo incident was, I think at the top of round three, I popped Hondo to get a squad token on my Chammerhead that I hyperspace assaulted in behind his Venator. And then I think I took a Confire token or a Repair token. I can't remember, but all I know was he got the Nav token from it and from Hondo and put it on his Venator. And had he not gotten that, I would have most likely killed it that turn. But instead, it was able to jump over all of my McThirties, and I think it survived the rest of the game on, like, just three or four hull.
Oof.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah.
The Hondo incident.
Yeah, it's... up until that moment, I was feeling really good. But after that, it was like, I felt like I was playing catch up for the rest of the game. I think by turn five, his Y-Wings just ended up eating the remainder of my ships alive. Where, had they not had the five squadron commands from the Venator, I think I could have scraped by with a win.
Yes, I know we all have those moments where we make a choice and it ends up haunting us for a little while.
Yes, I do. I start with those at list building, basically.
That's great. I wanted to talk about your blog. I didn't send you this question pre-recording, so forgive me. How's your blog going? How are you getting what you're wanting out of it?
Yeah, so really all that I wanted out of it was just a place to sort of share my own thoughts on different ships and squadrons and how to play the game and stuff like that. And recently I actually found two other guys from both Legion and X-Wing to write for those portions of the blog. So the three of us have been working together for the past, I want to say, 2 months now to really post each an article or two a week. And ever since then, we've been getting a lot more traffic than I expected, and it's going great, actually. I'm having a ton of fun doing it, and I love, you know, just sharing my thoughts on all the stuff and interacting with new players or veteran players that have thoughts on what I've said.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm subscribed to your blog. It's on my RSS feed, and your guys are ever closer to getting me to pick up X-Wing or Legion.
Stop it.
I'll have to relay that message to the guys.
We'll put a link in the show notes, but if anybody listening hasn't heard of your blog, how do they find it?
So it's going to be dysoncardboard.com is the title of the blog. And then if you're specifically looking for the Armada stuff, you could just click the Armada tab from the home screen, or if you type in dysoncardboard.com/Armada, it'll take you right there.
There's an article up that I just read this morning about Imperial squadrons in X-Wing, and they look so amazing. Got the little cards in there. He's describing like what they're good at, what they're bad at. I was like, man, I don't love Imperials, but I could go for some Imperial squads.
Honestly, I haven't been much of an X-Wing fan until this guy started writing articles with me. And literally, like, I think a week or two after I, like, brought him on board, I went out and bought a ton of Imperial stuff for X-Wing. And I've been flying it, like, a couple nights a week since then.
That's awesome. Wow. Now, something that's kind of enticed me about X-Wing is not actually playing the game or the community, but there's an RP aspect to it. Like you could almost see like building a dude that is, this is my little guy.
Yeah, it's sort of easier to imagine yourself as the pilot as opposed to like imagining yourself as the admiral of a fleet or whatever.
Yeah, or like the whole fleet, you're like, the fantasy isn't quite there for me.
Yeah.
I've got delusions of grandeur, so it works for me just fine.
Well, Cahoon, I think that's all for tonight. Thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for chatting.
It was great talking with you, and we'll probably have this episode out in over the weekend.
I look forward to listening to it, and you guys might get a cameo on my blog if you're lucky.
Ooh.
Joining us now is Vimes from across the ocean from me. How are you doing today, Vimes?
Very good, thanks. Glad to be here.
That's great. So how did your... I'm going to move off of my episode template just a little bit. How did your last game in the VWC go?
The last game was against Poli Colonia and his Ramadi fleet. It's quite scary, actually. He came in quite hard with a Kuat. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a Kuat that's loaded as a kind of shield wall, essentially, for the rest of his fleet, with kind of Captain Brunson and all kinds of excitement on it. And we played my capture the VIP, and he took first player. And I made a bit of a mistake in the deploying of the obstacles. I'd kind of not quite realized the exact positioning of where the VIP objective token had to go, but it worked out fine in the end. But his Kuat came straight in at speed 3 and tried to crush my VIP charge. I just about managed to squeak it away, but he had some brilliant maneuvering. And I just about squeaked the VIP away, and I lucked out on a few of my dice rolls, including a final red that was obstructed against kind of the rear of a Kuat as it was leaving on one hull, and I had to re-roll it to get a double and just about got there. But yeah, in the end, 8-3, I think it was. And unfortunately for one of his Architens had flown off in the midst of things and disappeared off the side of the board, and my Venator and all of my ships got away. So yeah, it was a close one, and that Kuat will haunt my nightmares for a little bit.
And so that was an 8-3 for you?
Yeah, an 8-3 for me, just about knocking the Kuat down. I think we both kind of had to go for it to try and get further up the table, and he really did. He went in really hard with that Kuat because of Ramadi, and because of Brunson, he wasn't too worried about the obstacles, so literally just went straight through an asteroid, it was a debris field, I think. Went straight through, blasting kind of 4 or 5 dice out the front. I only just escaped with the VIP. He maneuvered very carefully using take evasive action on the Chimera to just about try and ram the VIP, who was on one hull left, but it didn't quite catch and caught the other Constellar instead. So it could have gone either way, most certainly. It's a very exciting match.
That's how I like to run my my Kuats, except that it usually has the opposite effect, where I just kind of bounce it off some asteroids and it explodes into a bunch of pieces, and that's all. So it's glad to hear somebody's doing it right.
Yeah, it had EWS and Brunson and local fire control. So you were kind of shooting it and losing dice while it would shoot you back, and then suddenly you'd be unable to like get any damage in with a little fleet like mine. So I just about, with fire, everything I had, managed to take it down.
Well, and I'm excited to hear more about your fleet in a moment, because the Luminara being, you know, having an opportunity to be at the top table is exciting for me. I was maining her at the beginning of the Clone Wars content. But let's back up for a sec. How long have you played Armada?
So I've been playing since kind of early 2018, just as kind of Wave 7 was coming out. So the Chimera and the MC-75. And it was, so I had a kind of really relatively small but kind of welcoming community in my area. It was really nice because I'd never really played a miniatures game before. I don't think I realized how lucky I was at the time to have such a great community of players. And from there, I went to play a few tournaments and kind of met loads of really great people in London. It's been really good.
That's fantastic. So you said London, is that your local community?
Yeah, so I'm kind of North London, but I was just outside of London when I started, and we've got people all over the place. I'm really lucky now that there's a place where I can play really close to where I am in London. It's really good. But of course, the last few years have been a bit difficult, but yeah, we've had some really good stuff, and a little cheeky plug for the UK team. We've got an exciting event coming up in April, so watch out for that. So that's really cool.
Yeah, and although the world pandemic has certainly caused some downsides in the real life plastic spaceships, I feel like it's brought this community together in a really big way, and I'm happy that that's been a part of my life.
Yeah, it's been really nice that across kind of Vassal and TTS as well, like, we've had so many different opportunities to play with different people from all over the world. Like, I really, really enjoy, like, perhaps not the scheduling, but actually getting to play with everyone, like, from all over the place. It's really exciting. You get to see a huge variety of stuff as well. Like, we never really had kind of Morallo, so we've kind of avoided that. And I've seen it once or twice and kind of gone, that would be interesting to see once or twice. So there are some benefits here and there.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, I mean, I think it's good to give a big thanks to people like Biggs and GP and GK and everybody else, people on the TTS side who have, organized all these events that we've been able to have fun at and kind of keep the community together and rolling. So I think they deserve a big thanks.
Yeah, especially because I didn't actually, this is the first kind of Vassal World Cup I played in, but I did play in the Captain Brunson Zoops All Travel one way back in 2020, because I was planning to come over to Chicago and play in the Worlds and all that kind of stuff. I had it all set to go, so it was a real shame to miss that. But I was really glad to play in that. It was something that was really great. So big thanks to Biggs and the team for that.
Well, that's really interesting. So I don't think we've talked about it on the show, but Armchair and I were also planning to go to Chicago during that event. Yeah. We had our plane tickets and the hotel. I've been to Adepticon a handful of times, mainly for Malifaux, which was my prior war game. And I was super excited to go down there to play Armada and, meet the community. I actually think right now would be even better time to go there because I know so many more people than I did at the time.
Yeah, it's almost like a blessing in disguise. Like it hurt to have to miss that when it happened. But now having, not only had all these games, but talking to people like you, Vimes, and everybody else, you feel like you'd show up now and you'd be like, hey, I know you. Hey, I recognize your voice.
Yeah, it'd be really cool. And I think, at the time it was, really tough. But to see that we've been able to get all these people together and to know that there'll hopefully be something coming up at some point, like a real in-person kind of world, that is really exciting to know. But you're right. Yeah, really. Pretty interesting way it's all worked out.
So let's talk about your fleet for a little bit. I really want to hear about how you came to the Republic, Luminara, and then this particular fleet loadout.
Yeah, so I find I like to try lots of different types of fleets, which means I've tried lots of different kind of things in the different factions. So when the new factions came out, I was kind of, I thought I'll jump on one of those and kind of focus on it for a bit. So I jumped on the Republic in some of our kind of online tournaments. And we've had some really nice little online tournaments organized by some of our folks here. And I was enjoying playing a kind of a Bail Resolute kind of carrier. And I didn't have Svats, and it was all about kind of the Jedi and the Y-Wings and that kind of thing. But I was kind of pulling away from that. And I just wanted to try Lumi, as it seemed a really interesting ability and quite kind of anti-Sloan in a way. And I thought, oh, there's quite a lot of Sloan out there. I'll try her out because I can see how her ability might be quite useful for just putting a little bit of a kind of the brakes on Sloan as she comes in. So I started with like a kind of a 3-ship local fire control Venator and a clam and a pelter, and I think. But I found the problem was that they always had to fly in formation, and I was always kind of cocking that up in some way or another. And while I had like the, I think I started with the four aces that you often see, the kind of Anakin, Ahsoka, Kickback and Axe as the kind of bread and butter for Lumi. And they were really great, but it wasn't really meshing with the local fire control flat guns. I thought people were rightly just ignoring the Venator. I was like, that's the right call. Why would you go for something like that? And so I thought, how can I kind of, what can I do? And I hadn't really been hot for Svats at first. I thought, I can't really see the appeal. And then I tried it out. I thought, this kind of works. Like, gives you that side arc of danger, makes the teeth like sharper for the Venator. And I found that combining that with local fire control meant that you could still be a threat if they were deciding not to shoot you. And if they do shoot you, you're likely to get some salvaging back. So I pulled out the clam, swapped it for some little skirmishing T-70s, did a few kind of test runs. And I did have a consular cruiser at first, the little X-Rax kind of shoot and scoot, kind of little close range one. But after kind of suggestions from a friend and we tried it out a few times, I think the double charges that can add that long range plink damage just works better for the fleet. And I pulled off all of the extraneous upgrades on the pelter, and it just is a workhorse now. All it does is shuffle shields and send over tokens. And then the squads, Ahsoka, Anakin, Kickback and Axe, they're really, really good. I think in some of the games, some people might have seen Ahsoka pull through, and with between her and Axe, they can really tank squadron damage, and with the kind of ability to trigger Luminar as well, that can catch people off guard. But one of the things you have to be careful with Lumi, I think, is that you can't rely on your opponent to kind of make a mistake. You can't rely on them to just swan in and shoot you and then suddenly realize halfway through their plan that, oh, hang on, Luminar is causing a lot of damage. You have to be able to fire and be a threat as well. You can't just rely on that passive, they'll come to you and bounce off the brick wall kind of thing. Yeah, it's been quite interesting kind of evolving from this original kind of Republic carrier fleet that I was enjoying into this very combined arms system of having the squads plinking some damage, having a bit of salvo, having the spat as well.
I love it. I've been really into the Republic recently, and I think your fleet is really cool. It looks like something I'd want to fly.
It kind of relies on the force as well. There's like very little dice correction for the benefit. So yes. you do kind of, I find I roll my front arc, and I'm crossing all my fingers because the front arc often couldn't go. You want to be the way. The spat, a bit more reliable. Front arc, got to hope.
Something I find with Luminara, and maybe this is just me, I was playing Sackett the other day, and I related the same thing to him, and he kind of laughed about it, was sometimes I worry that I'm playing Luminara and that I'm not playing Star Wars Armada, because she has a particular mechanism that she allows you to do, and it can be super fun to like flip tokens and make them happen, but it doesn't necessarily translate to my ship has survived longer unless you do it properly. Do you have any thoughts on like using Luminara properly?
It does, I think, depend on matchup sometimes. So, and a canny opponent will focus their fire and make it difficult for you. But there are times when suddenly they realize, oh, I've got to start shooting a little charger, otherwise it's going to get away. And so they shot the charger, and suddenly your Venator can refresh a token or something. And it's those little moments you have to watch out for. And again, it comes back to that thing of you can't really rely on your opponent to make mistakes. So you've got to kind of try and force moments where if they decide not to shoot something because it's going to refresh a token elsewhere, then that's good. That's a good difficult position for them to be in. But yeah, you've just got to be aware of, sometimes you just got to spend tokens. You've got to spend multiple ones. And the Tranquility title, of course, with Luminara is really, really helpful just to shuffle those shields around. But yeah, sometimes you've got to not be afraid to just keep on spending tokens left, right, and center, and maybe you'll get one or two back. It can be quite useful just to give you that kind of sense that they've got to think about the other mechanic as well. It's something more for your opponent to deal with, another plate for them to spin.
Yeah, that's right. You put more bad choices on your opponent, more likely you're going to win. So how did your, obviously you made it to the Swiss rounds. How did you feel against your pod opponents when you first saw the list of them?
So my pod opponents, I was really interested in, actually. We had Spike with a Sato Hammerhead list, and we also had Ghost of Nobody in particular with the Yularen kind of Venator, two clams, a load of arcs, and Anakin. And then we had Black Admiral and the Fire Sprays. I think Black Admiral is the one that kind of, at first I was very, very kind of like, oh god, what's this going to be? Seven Fire Sprays? I'd not seen that before. The kind of flak gladiator that he had going, and I was very concerned that that would be really difficult. And I think I heard from someone as well, Black Admiral was a very good player. But I started with kind of Spike's list. I kind of felt quite confident about it. I don't know if anyone saw, but that was my worst game by far. It all went terribly wrong. That was very, very, very good fun. I kind of thought I'll pick off a Hammerhead with a Svet or two, and so I kind of just charged my Venator straight into a death pit, and he was very, very good in that he confired and threw all of his black dice out of one Hammerhead straight at the top of turn three, and an APT went through. I thought, you know, I'll salvage it, this will be fine, I'll just start the train of firing it out of everything out of the Venator, and of course it was coolant discharge. So the Venator was ready to go with a front arc, a side arc, and all of the salvos that would refresh, and then suddenly it made one shot, and that was it for the whole game. And so he slowly ate the Venator between the Hammerheads and the combat retrofits. I think the next crit he got through as well was compartment fire, where you cannot ready your defense tokens.
Oh,
so,
no.
So that essentially annihilated Luminara as well, so I couldn't even defend against it. Yeah, and of course, he did very well to save his combat retrofit to get the killing blow, which I think is nice to be a part of the history in that way. So yeah, that was a really interesting game. Ghost of Nobody in particular, I was quite confident with, I think. But yeah, we played Infested Fields, and it was quite unfortunate for one of his clams. It got a little caught up in the fields. I was able to manipulate them so that at one point it moved, and it landed on one asteroid, two debris fields, and two Exegol for seven damage in total.
That's a ton of damage. My gosh.
Yeah, that kind of turned the game at one point. But yeah, it was a tough one, but we came out of that okay. And then it was, yeah, Black Admiral's game again. I was really unsure because those seven fire sprays, and with, I think he had Commander Waldar as well. So suddenly seven fire sprays, kind of a few blue dice, but suddenly they can re-roll and their TIE fighters are just as good with loads of hull. But yeah, he overextended, and the fire sprays, all seven of them came in after Ahsoka. And between Luminara and Axe, she survived and managed to deal 12 damage back in return. So
I remember seeing that game. That was just a crazy, crazy amount of damage that those two squads just shrugged off. And then you turned around and just blew away those fire sprays.
Yeah, I can really see why he went for it and thought he could just wipe out the fighter screen with a coordinated attack. But I think it was the combination of having Lumi refresh the scatter again and the brace, and suddenly Axe used up all of his tokens to reduce like 4 damage at some point. So kind of he spent them all incrementally over the course of that entire battle, and he was left defense tokenless. But by that point, it kind of lured them into a bit of a flak trap as well. I can see why he went for it, and if it would have paid off, I think, if it wasn't for Luminara and Axe together. It was a really, really close kind of moment when I realized what he was doing, and I was like, oh, okay, we'll have to just try and weather this storm. And even then, his maneuvering with his raider, I was trying to pick it off with a SVAT, and he was using JJ on a raider. You can suddenly go at speed 4 and just go anywhere you want. And he spun it around the Venator. I think the Venator got like one shot at this raider as it nipped from side arc to side arc, and he just caught it with one of the C-70s.
Yeah, JJ on a raider at 4, that gives you like 6 clicks of yaw, doesn't it?
Yeah, he was doing like 2 clicks at the start, so it would start in one side arc and then spin around and be ready to leave at the other side arc. It was pretty good.
This is an interesting fleet in a couple of different ways. Like, this feels really non-meta. It's a Gladiator 2, 2 Raider 1s, 2 Guzantes, and 7 Fire Sprays. Like, that's not an Imperial fleet that you would expect to see on the table.
It's very similar to the one that Real Veers was using before he had to drop out. So I think they've only seen something there. Like, I can see that a lot of fleets, just the amount of like pressure that would be put on defense tokens from 7 times 2 blue bomber dice is pretty... pretty tough to weather for a lot of fleets. I can see how that could really do a number, but requires a lot of skill and a really, really interesting change, and really something that I've personally never seen anything quite like it.
Yeah. So you've told us about a number of games so far, which is fantastic. Is there any other games that's happened in your Swiss matchup so far that you'd like to talk about?
I played against Horngrim in the first one with his double Recusant, double hard cell battle refit under TF. And I'd not really played much against TF. And so there were a few timing things I hadn't quite clocked onto, such as kind of moments where you get rid of raid tokens and then realize, oh, he's just going to add another one with rocket troopers that's just going to keep coming. And he also massively outplayed me on the objective there. We played infested fields and I was a bit cocky and put my obstacles a bit closer to him, then got a bit closer to the middle. And so he immediately snipped in with both his tri-fighter aces and took 2 of the tokens that would kind of normally be on my side and be victory points for me. So I was immediately at a loss, which was really good. He flew them really well, but I just about held on, took on each of the Recusants as they came in. But I haven't played against Recusants very much. They are really interesting ships and really, really... kind of the way they maneuver just threw me off entirely, but we just about got through that one. Yeah, we had a bit of a Republic bout of fleet testing against Rimson that was almost a mirror match, except for the Admirals. He had Bail, and his Venator had, APTs rather than and Ordnance Experts rather than kind of local fire control like my one did. And we just kind of danced around each other a little bit, tried to double arc each other's big ship and failed. So we just kind of nipped each other out a bit, and I ran off with a VIP and took out some of his squads. Yeah, before the final game against Podoclonia, which I talked about earlier. So yeah, it's been really interesting. I think I definitely got my worst game out of the way and got all of my bad luck out of the way straight off the bat against Spike. And it's been kind of uphill from there, which is nice.
So I don't know if either of you know the answer to this. Do you feel like there's a chance for you to hit the top tables?
I think I'd have to be quite lucky to get up to the top tables now. I think I'd have to do quite well, and I'd have to see what happens with the other tables as well. I think I'm just kind of below the threshold of being confident to get into the top tables, but I've definitely got much further than I'd been expecting to. I'm really pleased. So yeah,
I can tell you, you're right now you're sitting on 21 tournament points in the Swiss. So you're only a couple points as it stands right now. You're 2 points out of 4th. which means that depending on how those top games go, you know, if they're swingy games, you know, like 10-1, 9-2s, you know, there's a bit of a window there, which is exciting.
Yeah, it's a really interesting element to the Swiss tournament, yeah, where you're suddenly looking at other tables going, how are they going to do and how well do I have to do in comparison?
And which one am I cheering for now?
Yeah. Yeah. Which one do I want to face up? And I kind of, in a way, I do want to play against Sloan with this Lumi League because I haven't quite had the chance. I've almost played against some of my local players with Sloan against it, but things have come up where we haven't quite been able to get our games going. And so I haven't seen the full Sloan and Lumi interaction, but also the onages. they're out there. They're waiting.
They are waiting.
I know Biggs was having a bit of trouble with the latest round of matchups. I think there was a bunch of people wound up at the top that had already played each other, so he's got to go back and kind of rejig the matchups a bit. I don't recall if it includes you or not, but as it stands right now on the spreadsheet, and you know, it's subject to change, you would face off against Rasprodius, who has got a General Kraken fleet.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really interesting one for me because I'm reliant on quite a lot of chip damage from salvos or from my little charges. And yeah, we'll have to see how that goes. I'm hoping I can swat a couple of little corvettes as they come in, but I know Rasprotius is a good player. I haven't played a huge amount against Kraken. It's nice to see that.
Yeah.
The Rebels kind of have some exciting new tools to play with, but yeah, I think it's two or three of the CR90Bs with point defense ion cannons.
Yeah, he's got three 90Bs with ion cannons, two As with TRCs, and Foresight with Lando, and a GR. And just Shara Tycho.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really, really good list. I really like the PDICs for those corvettes, giving them protection from bomber swarms as well.
So and good, yeah.
Yeah, really strong. We'll have to see, but because it will help against my salvos if he gets in. Normally, I'd be able to kind of salvo back with a guaranteed hit crit on a black, but if he can reroll it every time, that's pretty dangerous. But we'll have to see.
Yeah, plus Kraken. Kraken, yeah, is the obstruction guy, right? So, you know, that's another die you got to drop. And
yeah, he'll be able to come in nice and close with those CR90s, get a few shots off, and my retaliation isn't going to be as strong as I'd like.
Well, make sure you let Plausian know when that game is scheduled so that we can all watch.
Yes, I think we're currently planning for next week, Saturday. Hopefully get that in.
Well, I think that's all for now. Thanks a lot for joining us this afternoon, Vimes. It's been great talking with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much.
And now here's Armchair with the news. Armchair.
Thank you, Rythos. Last week finished up late, extending until the 17th, and this week has also been extended to the 26th, which as of recording is yesterday. The results spreadsheet got updated before I could get a look at the results, so I've had to do some math based on what I know of previous matches to come to these results, and as we found out last week, I don't always get it right, so hopefully I got it right this time, but we'll see. On table 1, Broba had his closest game of the tournament so far, edging Paul 7-4 with a 139 MOV. Both players lost their larges, but Paul's pocket ISD, his Victory Star Destroyer, managed to escape the swarm of ties, and Broba Fett's Quasar came within a whisker of flying off the table. Broba Fett maintains his top position. On table 2, the game versus Sam and MHD did not come off. MHD had to concede, meaning Sam got an 8-1, 140 MOV. On table 3, Louis Andre played a very cagey match against Unskilled First Officer. It was an all-Imperial matchup. Unskilled First Officer brought his Ozzel fleet with an ISD-1 Interdictor, two Gazantes, and a small but dangerous screen of American Jenden, Zertik, and two TIE Fighters. Louis Andre had an ISD-2 with Moff Jerry, a Gazanti, and an Iden Instigator Raider, with 132 points in squads, including Merrick, Jenden, Mauler, Saber, Tell, Interceptors, and two Fire Sprays. According to Louis Andre, USO did what he had to prevent Louis Andre's list from being too aggressive, slowing down to speed 0 on turn 1, and effectively shortening the game by 2 rounds. The battle didn't start in earnest until round 5, which didn't leave time for anything more than a squad skirmish. Louis Andre came out ahead by 25 victory points to take the game 6-5. The result keeps both players within reach of the top 4 with one match to go. On table 5, our 2020 champion Aresius stays in the hunt with a 7-2 victory over Green Knight. Aresius sits on 21 tournament points after 3 games.
And that's tied with Vimes as of right now?
As of right now.
Go guys.
On table 7, our local Maturin faced off against friend of the podcast Fox Omega in the Battle of the Undefeated Republic Admirals. Maturin eked out a very slim 6-5-17 MOV victory. According to Maturin, Fox Omega gave him a very tense game, Count Dooku's raid tokens made it very difficult to do what Maturin's fleet needed to do. While his ships were desperately struggling to raise shields and command squadrons, Fox Omega's Patriot Fist came aggressively in. The exchange of fire saw Patriot Fist succumb to the Plo-boosted ARC bombing runs, but Plo's Acclimator limped away on two hull, heading right for the side of the board. Everyone was sure it was doomed, but Maturin managed to bring it to a halt just short of the board edge.
And I think we saw a screenshot of that. Like, it was like it was, an inch. Yeah. He was off the table.
I was looking at that and go, oh, there goes the game. But no, he somehow managed to pull it out. Maturin is a good player and somebody that I enjoy playing against locally, except that I always lose.
And there's something else interesting about that is that I think he brought it down to speed zero, which is his own problem, because if Fox Omega had been able to capitalize on speed zero, that's a different kind of losing your ship.
It is. Yeah. It's a hard choice to make, but you know, you trust in the dice, and sometimes they come your way. That leaves Maturin at 19 points and Fox Omega at 18 points. Both of them need a lot of help to break into the top four. Down on table 9, Dark Raver's Superstar Destroyer keeps rolling with a 6-5, 26 MOV victory over Dreadlord Loki. And it's nice to see a Superstar Destroyer, especially an unconventional one with Captain Nita and an evade token, continuing to do decently well in the Swiss at this level. On table 10, JJ's Juggernaut and Garrett faced off, and Garrett had a bounce back game despite his gambling habit, and won 9-2 with a 240 MOV. He had this to say about his match. I had an extremely lucky win against JJ's Juggernaut, turning a small win for him or me, or even a tabling of my fleet, into a dirty and lucky win on my side. All of my CR-90s survived with one health, and two of them survived a full-powered Patriot Fist shot from the Recusant's front with a lot of black blanks. Garrett took pains to mention that JJ played better than him at that game and had really cold dice. He called out JJ for being a great opponent who kept calm and just accepted the dice as they were. On table 13, we have another win for General Tag, as Rold defeats Walker with a 9-2, 265 MOV victory. That leaves Rold on 19 tournament points. One table down, Duckbird's Venator continues to hold the title of ship least likely to get shot at, as she defeats Rimson 9-2 with a 250 MOV. Duckbird is also at 19 tournament points. Rimson, who started in the fourth seed, sits on 12 victory points.
And along with Vimes, who we were just talking to, I love seeing Luminara in the top tables.
So after three rounds of four in the Swiss, Boba Fett continues to lead with 27 tournament points, 905 MOV. He's got a 10-10-7 record in the Swiss, and he also holds the top elimination seed at this time by 8 tournament points. Sam has risen from 12th to 2nd with 25 tournament points and sits in 2nd for elimination seeding. Paul started down at 23rd and Horngrim at 17th are both tied for 3rd and 4th at 23 tournament points. Paul has the edge in MOV by just over 100 points. However, Horngrim has the 3rd elimination seed at this moment by 100 MOV due to a stronger pod phase. Severus Snape and Louis Andre are only 1 point behind them. And then when you look at the lead group, the sort of peloton behind them is super tight. You've got Garrett, you've got VWC 2020 champ Aresius, you've got friend of the podcast Vimes, all tied on 21 points. You've got Rasprodius and Unskilled First Officer tied at 20. You've got Grand General and Dark Horse Rold, Duckbird, and local hero Maturin on 19. And depending on how these top games go, like we said, if they're very swingy, if they're very extreme, you could have some of these top seeds tumbling out in the last moment, and some of these bottom seeds, or not bottom seeds, but chasers rising up. So I think we're set up for a really exciting last round of Swiss play with at least 10 players all in the mix to get into the eliminations.
Good luck, everybody. That's really cool.
Good luck to everybody. Please, as we mentioned, please let Plausian know when your games are scheduled so they can go on the calendar, because I think there are easily 6 to 10 games that are going to be super exciting, super tense, and super impactful on the standings. So that's it for the news. Now, in terms of sort of random stats that I've been kind of playing with, I've been updating my spreadsheets and my charts, and I want to take a look at points and see what it's been like for players who have gone from the pod phase into the Swiss phase. So if you look at points per game across the whole tournament, in the pod phase, you know, you'd expect them to be very, very evenly distributed, and they were. You know, the 7-4s was accounted for about 13% of all games. 8-3s and 6-5s were about 10% of all games. And the 10-1s and the 9-2s were about 8% of all games. Now, if you look at just the players who advanced to the Swiss, for those players, a score of 8, 20% of the time, which is the most common score for the people who advanced. 7s were 18% of the times. 9 and 10, you know, those higher scoring games didn't happen as often, you know, 14%, 12% of the time. And a 6-5, so some of these people who advance wound up with 6-5 about 11 or 10% of the time. No one who advanced wound up with a one-point loss, and only 14% of all their games scored below 5 points. So it kind of draws a bit of a line in the sand when you're thinking about what it takes performance-wise to get out of the pods into the Swiss. You want to hit those 7-point, 8 points fairly consistently. You can get away with a 6 or a 5. Anything below a 5, though, you're really going to struggle to get out. And interestingly as well, you know, those high swing games, you know, 10-1s, 9-2s, don't happen super often, even for the people who advance. When we look at total scores from the pod phase, and I kind of, you know, drew a little bell curve and saw what the most common scores were. 7 players wound up with 21 points at the end of the pod phase. The next most common tournament point score at the end of the pod phase was a tie. 6 people got 10 tournament points, 6 people got 20 tournament points.
That's quite a swing.
It is, yeah. And I was kind of surprised to see that much of an even distribution. I know I'm not a math or stats guy, so maybe that's to be expected. But you know, to my kind of casual hobbyist eye, it looked neat. When we look at how people got out of the pod phase into the Swiss, the ceiling, of course, was Brobafet. This year, he had 28 tournament points, a 7.83 MOV, and was clearly on top of all players in the pods. The floor to advance was 16 points, and 2 people scored that. Now, interestingly, Deridian's fleet in Pod Ramadi, with a 7.72 record, advanced into the Swiss. Medal of Fairness was the next closest in that pod at 15 points. However, Plausian's crazy hammerhead fleet in Pod Sloan with a 6.46 did not get out of the pod with a 16 tournament points because our Dark Horse Rolled had 17. So 16 points, and I remember last year I was in that position. I was the low seed into the Swiss at 16 points. You know, you can still make it in at 16 points. And so whenever you're in the pod and you're kind of looking at your scores and you're not feeling too good, you just got to remember, you know, 16 points can get you there. But it's iffy. If we look at the next bracket at 17 tournament points, only 3 out of the 5 players with 17 advanced. Mechanic from Pod Kraken, Rolled, as we mentioned, and Protomaker from Pod Vader. But our friend of the podcast, In Rob We Trust, from Pod Radis, and Speaker from Pod Thrawn, didn't make it in with 17 points. And you can blame it on Constantine, but Irish Mad Cat, at 18 and 3/4 points averaged, had the highest score that ended up missing the Swiss. And that's just a factor of having 5 players in that pod and only the top 2 could advance. So that was a bit of a tough break for Irish Mad Cat. So we'll pop a link in the show notes to the spreadsheet that I've been working on. I've added some extra charts and graphs and stuff, you know, comparing pod phase to Swiss phase, you know, who advanced, across commanders and deployments and activations. So there might be some interesting information in there for people if you're interested. Also some charts about this point distribution and advancement totals. And so that'll be in the show notes if you want to take a look. Also, please, if you're still playing in the Swiss, please let Plausian know when you've got your game scheduled, because I know a lot of us are super interested in watching all the games, not just the top games, but anybody who's out there playing a game like myself and Rathos. If we weren't lucky enough to advance, we still want to kind of keep our fingers on the pulse and feel like we're involved. So we like to cheer people on.
Well, that's it for tonight. I'm Rathos42.
And I'm Armchair Jedi.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
Thanks for listening to the Vote and Beat Show. We don't have a Patreon or Apple reviews for you to give us, but if you have a story you'd like to tell us or feedback on the podcast, write us at votebeatarmada@gmail.com or on Discord. Listen to us next week for more Vassal World Cup commentary.